For weeks, my husband Ryan and I entertain window salesmen, some of whom direct their pitches directly at Ryan, forgetting that I am a wage earner. We politely show them the door. But when a bespectacled, slightly balding man enters our house and thrusts his hand first in my direction, nodding, "Nice to meet you," I implicitly trust him before he has ever opened the thick, padded binders brought along for display. He recommends casement windows for the living room, double hung for the dining room, and awning windows for the master bedroom. We agree, and spring arrives. A crew of men removes the windows and their peeling sills, and for the first time, a breeze blows through our 1950s ranch. Replacing the windows that had been painted shut by the former owners would be the most expensive home improvement project we ever undertook in our first house. And there wasn't any real guarantee we will be staying. "It's really only two bedrooms, you know," my mother-in-law had tried to forewarn when we fell in love with 1,100 square feet on a gray day in February. But we weren't planning for babies. Guests, of course, and for them we had adequate room in the finished basement. Ryan and I were in our mid-20s, barreling through the beginnings of our careers. Family was a faint figure on the horizon. Or rather, the state of affairs next door, where 4-year-old Jonathan, whose steel-trapped memory for the food preferences of dinosaurs, and his brother lived. For nearly 3 more years, we didn't think of where we might put the children in our little house 4 blocks north of the library, even if I did indulge domestic zeal. I stripped wallpaper, painted the kitchen, borrowed a sewing machine from a neighbor to make blousy curtains for the dining room double hungs. I cooked regular meals for guests. We gathered my graduating high school seniors on the spacious deck as each school year ended and lasted long evenings with friends under our brass chandelier and on our hand-me-down couches. From the day we moved in with the help of friends who stopped to play an impromptu basketball tournament in the driveway after the truck was unloaded, the little gray house warbled its hello. 927 Chestnut was home. And finally, in March snow, we carried her home, 2 weeks past her due date, Audrey Grace, our first child. Within hours of our arrival, we called the hospital hotline, reporting vague symptoms like persistent crying and inability to fall asleep. For months, I wore motherhood like a borrowed pair of maternity pants, ill-fitting and ugly. I suffered crying jags. I spent entire days in my pajamas. 2 weeks into the ordeal, a neighborhood friend, mother of three, dropped off dinner before lunchtime and noticed my swollen eyes and my haphazardly buttoned shirt. She patted my back consolingly and assured, "It's this hard for everyone." The nights wore long. The prayers wore longer still as I sat on the floor of Audrey's nursery, rocking her cradle and fearing the indulgent act of picking her up. Maybe the happenstance of having become parents has fortified affection for the little gray house on Chestnut, for which we began planning an addition, even a second story. I only know it's the home I want to drive by slowly when more of life is behind than ahead. And if the children beg for a story, as long as patience sustains their interest, I'll let myself begin the history of home. Home comforts. After an affair and public divorce, Sandra Singh Lowe published an essay in The Atlantic titled "The Weaker Sex," claiming that the new household economics have made today's women unwifeable. Because the modern woman has achieved...